In the first source, it really goes to the second episode of this week's parsha. Va'Avraham zaken babi yamim, va'Hashem beirach et Avraham bakol. And Avraham became, I would say, exceedingly elderly, and God blessed him with everything. If you look at the first verse of the second source, which is the beginning of the Haftorah, you have a half... Well, let's read it first, and then we'll try to understand it. V'hamelech David zaken ba b'yamim, v'yechasuhu b'bagadim v'lo yichamlo. So, the King David became exceedingly elderly, and they had to cover him up with clothing because he wasn't able to retain heat. So, you have the first half of both verses being the same, but then you have the second half where there is a major difference. And, you know, in trying to understand what exactly is the theme of the Haftorah and how it connects back to the Parsha, and perhaps most importantly, what insight it gives us back into the Parsha, which means, theoretically, you can use the Haftorah as a perush, as an explanation to the Parsha. Which means by seeing which points it's stressing and what it's about. Now, theoretically, the whole connection could have been the first half of the verse and that's it. You know, it stops right there. First half of the verse, Abram was old, David was old, look at this connection now, that's all that it is. Although, I think that some of us suspect that perhaps there is a little more to it than simply somebody becoming elderly. And apparently the issues of what happens once they become old are not necessarily the same, but then you have this incredible contrast between the image of the elderly Abraham, who we're told God blesses him with everything, versus the elderly David, who seems to be suffering a bit more from him. Not only are we not told that God blesses him with everything, we see that just in terms of even the most basic physical level, he's not able to retain heat. If you continue to the next verse, the Yoma Avraham El Avdo, Zaken Beto, and Avram speaks to one of his servants, the elder of his house, and then if you look in the beginning of the second verse by the Haftorah, Vayomer Lo Avadov. So also, I'm just saying, just in theme, you can look and try to chart it. Of course, at that point, it seems to go in very different directions, whereby by Avraham, the emphasis is then going to be on finding a wife for Yitzchak, and that's going to take up the most of the parasha, will be the courtship of Rivka, which is probably quite unromantic, being that the groom is not involved in it at all. It's courtship by proxy. Maybe it's better that way. Hire a service to go out on a date and let them know how it works. Right? No, it's not even a shot. It's proxy. Dating by proxy.
It goes on.
It goes on.
We had it in Veteran War Brides, mm-hmm. World War Brides. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anyone interested? While the continuation of the Haftorah is, first of all, we're probably less familiar with it because we most likely have not read it as recently, if at all. And it really has a number of different elements to it. Initially, what we're told is about, it's continuing from the second half of the first verse. David HaMelech is called. So, they have a wonderful solution. My father loved the solution. Whenever he was cold, he always told my mother that. Either raise the heat or we'll get to other ways of solving the problem. V'yomer lo avadav yivakshehu la'adoni ha'melech na'ara betula v'amda lefnei ha'melech utihi lo sochenet v'shachva b'chekecha v'cham lo deni ha'melech. Now this is a quite creative, old-fashioned way in bringing up David's body temperature. And the reality, despite the possible ability for misinterpretation, this doesn't seem to be at all sexual in any way, and that is pretty much evidenced by the continuation of the story. But rather, this person who they end up finding is Avishag Ashunamit, whether she's related to the Shunamit that we saw last week is a question which is debated. And what's also interesting, Pasuk Gimel, even though I claim there's nothing sexual there, Vayivakshehu na'ara yafa. Hold it a second. If we're just talking about body heat, then I guess this is, once you're already going to go there, so she may as well be attractive. But I'm saying that that's really quite interesting. Why Okay, not only is she good looking, she's exceedingly good looking. Okay, lo yada is over here. He did not know her in what you would say in the biblical sense. Being that this is the Bible, I guess that's quite convenient. Now, that is the introduction to the Haftorah. It doesn't stop there, although, you know, theoretically it didn't have to go that much further if, bless you, if the issue were David HaMelech's old age, how he deals with the old age, how he has a problem, and how the problem is solved. That sounds pretty much like the story, although apparently Chazal didn't feel that that is the entire story, and if one does look at the Haftorah, that is not where we end.
What does Sochenet mean?
I'm not sure. No, it doesn't mean agent. I think it's more from Sikha in terms of oil and things like that. I think. I'm not sure. Yeah, so actually, the Haftorah not only doesn't stop there, it carries on for a while. And as you continue, you realize that the major issue which arises is really one of what we would call palace intrigue. Because with an elderly king, you have specific problems, specific issues. And the most important issue is one of inheritance in terms of the crown, who is going to be the new king. And that is really where we find the intrigue, and that's really where we find what the major issue is here. And that's what we pick up on in Pasuk Hey, Adoniah ben Chagit. Chagit is one of David's numerous wives. Adoniah is therefore one of his very numerous sons. But Adoniah ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch.
Excuse me,
I'm sorry. Pasuk Hey. Hey, in the second source. Excuse me. It says agent.
I know that.
That's how it translates. Read the verse in English.
No, sorry.
Oh no, that we know.
So you mean that?
We're not sure what it means over here. Over here, it translates it as krova. Krova, close, physically close. Again, Pasuk Hey, Adoniah ben Chagit mitnase lemor ani emloch. And Adoniah, one of David's sons, he gets a little, shall we say, carried away, and also a little premature. I mean, David's not exactly dead yet. But he nonetheless has determined and decided that he will be king. Ani emloch. Vayas lo rechev uprashim. Vachamishim ish ratzim lefanav. So not only does he decide that he's going to be king, he starts to collect the various quote unquote trappings of kingship. In terms of having an entourage and the proper automobile and so on. And his father never stopped him. And then you have a very interesting, perhaps even psychological point. And his father never stopped. He's very attractive, and he was born after Avshalom. Now you know how the Avshalom story ends up. He's also a man who decides that he wants to be king, which means, you know, if you start to consider David's life. A, you can certainly make a movie out of it, but it's much intrigue, much pain, much difficult situations, And does he does David really want to confront Adonijah? Does he really want to force the situation here in order to get into a conflict with a second son, which could easily result either in him being killed by his son or of him having to kill his son? So it says that his son starts to act as if he's king, and David does not stop him. And at this point, as we're continuing, we say, okay, so what in the world does this have to do with our parasha? And as we continue, that's really what this whole rest of the Haftarah is about, the various issues and intrigues involved in, what's the word for this, if there's a better word?
Succession
of the king. But that's the issue.
But what it involves is the child, the son of Abraham versus the sons of David.
Correct. So if we want to now come back and nonetheless push the point and say, okay, so therefore what is the comparison? So we can say, okay, maybe these things that we see in David's house also take place in Avraham's house. Maybe that's part of the issue between Yitzchak and between Yishmael, or even though we don't necessarily see any of that, and now we're going to get quite creative and read between the lines something that we just don't see at all.
I was thinking that it was interesting that with the Abraham story that focuses on the woman, when the David lineage is we hear all about the men.
Well,
it's almost like the intrigues with Sarah, Rivka, Bacha, Leah, they all take place among the women, the men are.
Well, you can read the next couple lines then. That's not intrigue, and she's not a woman, okay. But aside from that, it's completely different. Okay. Right. V'yu dvarav im Yoav ben Tzruya, v'im Evyatar Kohen, v'ezur achari Adoniyah. Which means he starts to get a coalition of support. He starts to get people that are with him. He starts to get military people with him. And he starts to get Kohanim with him. Which means here's a man who decided he wants to be king. By the way, the one thing which is frustrating him at this point is his father won't go and die yet so that he can, you know, get on with his kingship. But that is the background of this story. I skip a whole bit over here, because at some point over here in Pasuk Kaf Chet, Vayan Hamelach David Vyoma Kiruli Lebat Sheva Vatavolafne Hamelach Vatamodlafne Hamelach Vayishava Hamelach Vayoma Chai Hashem Hashepada et Navshimi Kol Tzara Ki Kaasher Nishbati Lach Vahashem Elokei Yisrael Imor Ki Shlomo Benechim Loch Acharai Vuhu Yeshev Al Kisi. Which means after the whole thing plays itself out a bit more, and again, I don't want to ruin the story for you, so you can certainly, you're invited to come and read it on your own, but once all this is presented to David, he doesn't know about it, and he certainly doesn't know how far it's gone. It's hard to say he doesn't have any clue whatsoever, but at the end, he does assure Bathsheba that her son Shlomo will be king, and Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vatikod Bathsheba Apayim Eretz, Vatishtachu Lemelech, Vatomer Yichi Adoni Hamelech David Laolam. David should live forever, which again is perhaps quite different from what Adoniah actually wants. I mean, that's the way the Haftarah ends. I would assume that Bathsheba understands quite well that if Shlomo was supposed to be king, and if at some point David said that Shlomo would be king, and if Adoniah really wants to be king, that as soon as David dies, one of the first things that Adoniah is going to have to do is get rid of Shlomo, not only Shlomo, get rid of Bathsheba, get rid of anybody who he sees as being in his way. So over here, as I said, palace, intrigue, issues of succession, and we have that starting point, which was really identical for the first half a verse. And then we moved on into different directions. So here would be a Haftarah that would, again, to my mind, be completely intriguing as far as, you know, what's going on. Now, the first thing that we would want to consider is that contrast between God blessing Bakol, versus David not being blessed at all, or even being called. And the next thing that comes to our mind is to begin to think, well, is it possible that David HaMelech would have done anything wrong in his lifetime which would have perhaps resulted in this type of a punishment whereby instead of his body being physically warm, his body is physically cold. Which means, is there anything there? And then you have to say to yourself, you know, even though the Gemara tells you not to say this, well, David seems to be, certainly in some episodes, to be somewhat hot-blooded. And what wonderful poetic justice now is that not only is he not hot-blooded at this point, he can't warm up his body. And again, if you want to think about the implications of this young, attractive, or we're even told very attractive woman who's there giving him body warmth, but David HaMelech is now at the point that he can't even do anything about it, even if he wanted to do something about it. And there seems, and again, in terms of a sexual way, and that seems to be at least something which is ironic. So as far as if David HaMelech deserves this, I'll tell you right now, there are some commentaries which are the more Kabbalistic, mystical ones, who will say that David HaMelech has become such a big tzaddik, and he's done so much tshuva, so much repentance, that now he's come to the point that he's not even a body anymore, he's just a neshama, and the evidence is look, that his body, it doesn't even function like a regular body. So I'm saying, there's one way to put a spin on this, is to say, oh, look at the wonderful level that David has taken himself to. The other way that some commentaries take the same information is to say, well, look how David HaMelech now is suffering for his indiscretions of his youth in terms of being taking at least one woman that he shouldn't have, and looking at the results of what took place of this, and now David HaMelech is going to be punished for this. The other issue that comes up among the commentaries is or revolves around the issue of clothing, which means, again, it's why would I bring clothing into it? Because it says that they cover him, vayichaseil bibagadim, the lo yichamlo. He gets covered with clothing, but the clothing doesn't work. That's just a very interesting thing. No, that's not interesting to you. That's very interesting. Where clothing fails him. I don't have to point out to you, unless I have to point out to you, that the word clothing, we've talked about this years gone by, that there are many different words for the word clothing. This particular word comes from the word beged. Beged is the same letters as the word bagad. It's something, begida is treachery, being a traitor. Begida also would be somebody who has an affair. Would also. So the idea of this kind of treachery, and by the way, if you then want to think about it, initially, where does clothing come from? Clothing comes all the way back when the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve were naked, and then they get big, which means the big gadim, which they receive, to a certain extent, are a response to their bigida, which means they were treacherous in terms of their relationship with God. They don't listen to the word of God, and they end up needing bigadim. So now David's at the point where, how do you say bigida? Give me a better word for bigida.
Betrayal.
What?
Betrayal.
Betrayal, good. Surely, excellent. Betrayal. But now David's bigadim are betraying him. So I'm saying that's what's interesting about this verse, which means the role of clothing is supposed to warm you, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. But when you put on a nice, you know, down comforter, you're supposed to be warm afterwards. But now the bigadim, right, his clothing is betraying him, and it's not providing him with warmth. Now that actually takes us to a different episode in Navi, where David does something inappropriate to someone's clothing.
Shaul, because Shaul's clothing, Shaul was sleeping in the cave, and he could have killed him. He didn't kill him, he just took a piece of his clothing, and he later on came to me and said, look, I was so close to you, I cut your robe.
Now look how interesting that is. Shaul is Melech, and David will become Melech. Shaul is king, and David is the man who will be king. What does David do? He goes to something which, the king's clothing, which keeps him warm. He does some kind of outrage to the king's clothing, ripping the king's clothing. And the issue, of course, is going to be now of succession. Who is going to be the one who's going to succeed Shaul? It's going to be David. So now what happens afterwards? Now, when we're getting to this chapter of the succession of David, what ends up happening? His clothing is rebelling against him. So could this perhaps be related to some issue in terms of the way that he ended up treating Shaul? So I'm saying, so there are commentaries that will take us in that direction as well. Look at the Sefer Halikutim in Source 3. Sefer Halikutim is based on the writings of the Arizal. I can assure you it's quite mystical, but he asks some very down-to-earth questions. V'amnam be'el, where it's underlined. He starts off, sorry, from the beginning. V'amelech David zaken ba v'yamim v'yachsir b'gadim v'lo yicham lo. So, right away, in the part we'll skip, he goes into a part commentary of the Zohar, which compares David and Avraham. And now let's go where it's underlined. V'amnam be'elu ha'psukim yesh l'shol ha'shinoy nimtza bein b'yat ha'yamim shel Avraham l'shel David ha'melech alav ha'shalom. That dalet hey ayin hey. Okay? The differences between the two. Kisham hayazaken v'sava yamim ben mea shiv'im v'chameh shana. When Avram gets old, he is 175 years. By the way, this is not precise, because in this verse over here that it speaks about Avram getting old, it's at the point that he sends to find a wife for Yitzchak. It's not at the point that Avram dies, so he's not quite 175 yet. You just have to do the math and figure out how old Yitzchak was at this point, which we're told 40, to figure out how old Avraham was. So he's got some years to go. The David ben Shivim Shana. Okay, that's obviously a lot less. Bilvad. Meaning, right there is an issue. The Avram nitbarech bakol. The David v'chazer b'gedim v'lo yichamlo. So it means, roughly, David is half Avram's age, and David seems to be in far worse shape. V'od lavin mahim elu habagadim v'kisuyah. He goes, what's this whole issue of the clothing and being covered up? V'lo malo yichamlo. Why doesn't he get warmed? Is there a lack of clothing that a king is going to have access with that he can't keep warm? So if one blanket's not enough, so you put on a second blanket. The second, so you put on a third. So what's going on over here? And then he also points out, va'od, towards the bottom, va'od lavin lama hayta yafa ad ma'od ki belize eze betula hi mechamemet, meaning the woman's looks help the warmth process. Meaning, what does one thing have to do with the other? By the way, he then claims, I've not done any studies on this, he claims ki tiv'a cham yoter mihayafa, ki tiv'okar kimoshi yadu labalei hateva. He claims, based on a scientific knowledge, that unattractive women are actually much warmer than attractive women.
He's done a study.
As I said, I haven't done any studies. If anybody's interested in commissioning a study, then... I'm sure there are many people willing to volunteer to get to the bottom of this. See, if you say that you're talking about personality and so on, so then maybe you can begin to understand this, but I don't. But at least I got you to smile. Okay. And then he goes into a whole interpretation at the end, which I'm not going to read, but you can look afterwards, where he does go in the direction that, no, this is just telling you, this is what I told you before, that David HaMelech really had worked on his body so much, on his Yetzer Hara so much, that at this point he's completely cold and he can't be warm, and he sees this as terms of David HaMelech's tshuva. And he also said that David had mourned so much, and look at the where it's underlined, the second line there, Kedei lit labesh ba ki ein lavo el shah HaMelech belevush sak. Borrowing a verse from Megillat Esther, you can't come to God wearing sackcloth. So his understanding of this is that David is about to die and come in front of the Melech. So he's been mourning for the last who knows how many years and doing tshuva for the last how many years, which, by the way, is not a bad thesis when you read Tehillim to see how much David really has mourned and has tried to correct himself. But he's saying is that you can't come that way. Ki im b'chalukad yirabanan, l'chzot b'noam Hashem, that one needs to be with a proper rabbinic garb to stand in front of God. V'davar melech alav Hashem, he sig be'ilu ha-shivim shana shechai, mashi sig Avraham alav Hashem v'kuf ayin hei shana. And then he goes to this more spiritual thing, and he says that no, it clearly must be that that David in his 70 years got to the same spiritual level as Avraham. But again, he looks at this whole thing of the warmth and lack of warmth completely as a spiritual issue, and not at all as some kind of a physical issue. He further explains this in the Sefer Likutim in Source 4, where again where it's underlined, V'derech ha-tshuva she'asahi midah k'neged midah, David's tshuva will be midah k'neged midah, v'hizot she'amur la'avodah v'yukushil l'melech na'arab t'ulat t'ovah ma'arav v'shachla b'chekech v'tihil l'melech sochenet, klomor afal pisha adayin hu b'tokfo yachnia yetzah harava lo yigaba. So this becomes this kind of a test for David, who has given in to his yetzah hara so many times that at this point they're going to put a beautiful girl right next to him, but he's not going to be allowed to consummate a relationship with her. But by the way, this is quite bizarre in terms of theology, because I know as well as you do that there is a source that says a person is not considered a Baal Teshuva till they're put in the same situation, but nonetheless, most people would say that it's extremely irresponsible and stupid to put yourself in the same situation. And a matter of fact, Rav Yisrael Salanter says, if you initiate the situation, not only is that considered to be that it's part of, not only is it not part of your tshuva process, you get punished for putting yourself in the same situation, because that is utter stupidity. So, right. So
it wasn't his doing. It was the
service. But still, I mean, one would presume that as king he has certain rights, including to say no. But again, it is interesting because he is, again, following what I said before, looking at the whole problem of the heat, lack of heat, cold, as being on a spiritual level.
I think James saying 4 about the women is a clue.
Yeah.
Abraham did not have a son because he had a relationship with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he took her back to the time, he first noticed that she was beautiful. So the relationship was based on something other than sexuality. And David...
But why did he notice that she was beautiful then? So you know what the Medrash says?
What?
The Medrash, I heard this from a Rebbetzin. Okay, said that the Medrash says is that as they were coursing the Nile, she had to lift up her skirt so that it shouldn't get wet. So apparently, Sarah Imeno had great legs. I don't know if you want to repeat this. And not in my hand.
It's,
right. That's very good, and that's certainly what the Sefer Likutim is saying. Okay? Welcome back. Yes?
There's another interesting difference between these two openings, and one is that Abraham seems active and David seems so passive up until the point when he speaks to Bathsheba.
Who sounds older?
David.
Yeah. Yeah, David sounds much, much older than Abraham does, even though chronologically. Yeah. David sounds at the point that he's, I don't know how to say it, he's checking out very soon. He sounds like he's dying. That's really the situation. David HaMelech sounds like he's dying. He's in the process of dying at this point, and therefore it's all the affairs getting in line. While Avraham, that's what I was saying before, Avraham's not going to die for a long time. You want to do the math very quickly now? Avraham at this point is 140. He dies 100. That means Avraham's about another 35 years to go.
At the end of the parsha, he gets remarried, and he has a whole bunch more children. I mean, it's like he's got a whole...
Right. Avraham is not dying, but Avram is concerned with finding a wife for Yitzchak. So as I said, we can get further and further into the Haftorah and still not necessarily find our way out, unless you just want to stay and say, okay, that all that Chazal wanted to tell us is that there's a contrast. And that would be somewhat interesting, that the whole Haftarah would not be that it's the same message, but it's just a contrast. And the message ends after the first couple words. At the bottom of source 4 is the other thing that I told you before. The Gamkin al yidei hatzar shetzi'er l'sha'ul bikritato knaf mi'ilo, and also the pain that he caused to Saul by cutting the corner of his coat, v'naga b'chvod hamalchut, by doing this, he touched the honor of the king, of the kingship, l'zekan nitzta'er David. And that's why he needs to get punished here, or needs to have some pain. V'aduniel minasei lemor aniyam loch. And again, I don't think he intended over here to put that together, because he's going on to another point, but that is exactly the issue. What Adoniah is doing to him, to a very great extent, is what David did show. And by the way, it's much sharper than that. After this whole episode ends, and we end our Haftorah, and David guarantees Bathsheba that in fact the new king will be Shlomo, what does Adoniah do as his last resort? And again, he is quite clever. What does he do as his last resort request? In source number 7. What? He goes to Bathsheba and he says, listen, I'm not going to be king and Shlomo would be king. Just do one thing for me. No. That's not you. What does he want? He wants Avishag. So he wants David's clothing. No, is Avishag David's clothing? Yes. That's what she is. V'yavo Adoniah ben Chagit el Bathsheba, im Shlomo, v'tomar ha-shalom bo'echa, v'yomer shalom, v'yomer davar li elayach, v'tomar davar. Comes over, says, there's one thing I want to say to you, and he says, v'yomer at yadat ki li hayta hamelucha. He says to him, you know, I used to be king. Right? V'alai samukol yisro p'neim l'mloch, and the whole community was looking for me to be king, the whole country. All the people. But tesofim l'mlucha v'tilachi, and then this strange thing happened, and the kingship ended up with my brother. Ki me'ashem haitalav, God determined it to be for him. So, but by the way, do you, in terms of this opening line, do you find him very sincere at this point? Or do you find him somewhat insincere? What? I am. Okay. V'atash ela achat anochi sho'el mi'itach. He goes, I have one question for you. Al tashivi et panai. Don't, you know, disappoint v'tomer lai daber. And you told me to speak. V'yomer imrina l'shlomo ha'melech ki lo yashiv et panayach v'yitain li et avishag ha'shunamit li'isha. Do me one favor. Let me have avishag ha'shunamit as a wife. So now, why does he want Avishag as his wife? And was this a wise thing for him to do, or is this perhaps unwise for him to do? What's the advantages versus disadvantages of this? No, we have no idea. Okay, advantages. She's very pretty. Good. Disadvantages.
Well, he wants to conquer her.
Was she
the...
Okay, she was not the king's wife. Had she been the king's wife, then... He'd be breaking Jewish law because you can't marry your father's wife. Okay, so that's not an option. But it's good to see that you all are well read.
Took her from someone, and now he wants the woman who was with David
mm-hmm.
to come to him.
Okay, so it's good because there's something very interesting going on here in terms of David's relationships and David's relationship with Bathsheba. And now, but let's stop before we go too far into this. There's a basic difference. David has numerous wives. As a king, he's allowed to have more than one wife. He's allowed to have more than five wives. As far as I know, he had 18 wives. I don't know all of their names. David also has a woman named Avishag. She is not his wife. So now, had Adoniah said, I want to marry one of David's wives, that would have been an outrage in terms of Jewish law. And that's something which obviously could not have happened. And if it happened, then obviously we all would have known clearly right then that this is something which is unacceptable. Okay? That's point one. But what is the status of Avishag? So this you need to know.
She's not even a concubine.
So what is she? Absolutely. Absolutely a power play. But what? First of all, what is she? She's one of the king's, and I'm going to say it right now, what?
Intimate.
She is one of the king's possessions, which by virtue of being a possession of the king, no one else is allowed to have, quote unquote, this possession. But let me put it a little differently. I'll go back to the way I formulated it the first time. She is the king's clothing, and therefore somebody who's wearing the king's clothing can then claim that he's the king. Who sees through all of this? Shlomo. Then again, Shlomo was pretty smart. And Shlomo, at the very end over here, said, no, he says more than this. He goes, Adoniah will be put to death for this. That attempting to take Avishag is obviously his clever way to be able to say afterwards to the masses, look, Avishag is my wife and Shlomo gave it to me. Obviously, I'm the one who's going to be king because only somebody who's king can possibly inherit Avishag, as it were. By the way, the Rambam writes about this. I'm just going to quote it from source 8 from the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a little clearer. Avishag muteret l'shlomo. Shlomo would have been allowed to marry Avishag. Why? Because he's the king and he inherits all things of the king. Muteret Shlomo Melech. Sorry, I skipped over there. Muteret Shlomo Melechu Umelech Mishtamesh B'Shavyato Shamelech. He's allowed to use the kelim or the scepter of the king. V'Asura LaAdonia Hediyotu, because he is not a king; he is a commoner. So over here, what you have is a commoner trying to ultimately make this power play to be able to take the scepter of the king. And in this case, see, Avishag, you know, we don't like to turn women into objects. Avishag is a woman who became an object. She became an object even by the way that she's introduced in the very beginning. She's being used for her body. Let's get that out of the way. Avishag is an object being used for her body, but the significance of her being used for David is that this is something which is the king, and therefore what Adonijah is trying to do, he's trying to indicate that he is going to be king. So now, everything we've said till now, we realize perhaps the intrigue which goes on, court intrigue, palace intrigue, succession issues, and then we go back and we say, so what in the world does this have to do with our issues? Now, you touched something interesting about Bathsheba, because in the situation of Bathsheba, David acts in an inappropriate manner. And again, we can go and open up various commentaries, Chazal, that maybe David did sin, maybe didn't sin, maybe she was really divorced at this point, maybe she wasn't divorced. And again, I'm not going into the whole situation, because when you judge things in morality, if you have to get to technical details, then you realize it's immoral. Did that make sense, what I just now said? Right? There's a moral issue here. The question is there also a legal issue, but there's a moral issue over here. Which means, basically, David sees a woman, is attracted to him, he's hot-blooded, and then he arranges to get her. Again, the rest of the details right here are not as significant to us, but there is something wrong going on. And Chazal, the Navi tells us that something wrong is going on. If Natan HaNavi says it to David, so why do I have to work so hard right now? I mean, something wrong happened. David used his power as king in order to take a woman that wasn't his. Now, you pointed out, I think, a very interesting analogy about that, because that takes us back to Avraham and Sarah. Before that, here we have Avraham and Sarah victimized by the same type of behavior. Right? When they go down into Egypt, and Avram says, say it's my sister, and Sarah gets taken, and which is a theme which not only happens once, but repeats itself a number of times. So if we're in our contrast mode, and you wanted to look for one more contrast, here not only do you have a dissimilarity between Avraham and between David. It's incredibly stark because Avraham is victimized in the same way that David ends up victimizing somebody else. Right? So, I had a thought that I want to think about together. David, it's David HaMelech, it's Avram Avinu, it's Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Certain people, that's their last names apparently, right? Avram's tent, there was a thing that said Avinu, the Avinu family. And in our minds, clearly, it's Avram Avinu. Avram's the forefather, and Moshe is our teacher, and David is our Melech, and that's the relationship. Aaron's the Kohen, and then these are all prototypes. So it gets me thinking: can we also imagine Avraham as a king? Which means, is there anything kingship about Avraham? Is Avraham also a king? Or when we think about king, there's nothing about kingship within Avraham. And the first response is to go like this and say, no, Avraham is not a king. And you know what the best reason he's not a king? He doesn't have any followers. One of the important things you need to be a king is to have followers. It's like to be a Rebbe, to be a Hasidic Rebbe, you need Hasidim. Without Hasidim, it doesn't work. So is there anything kingship about Avraham? And it could be in the text of the Chumash itself you don't see so much. Then again, maybe we're not looking in the right places, but certainly there's a number of rabbinic expressions that will, I think, clarify the issue a bit. First of all, let's go back to the beginning of this week's parasha.
When he goes to bury Sarah, they recognize him as a prince.
Exactly, that's what I want to look at in this week's parasha. See? Good. Okay, let's take a look. Good, as I said, if you start looking, then you realize maybe there's more to this than you would think. First of all, going back to this week's parsha, when Avram does come to bury Sarah and he wants a place to bury him, what do they say to him? I am someplace in the middle of source 9. On the and pasuk vav, Shamenu Adoni Nasi Elokim Ata Bitochenu. Sir, listen, you are a nasi. Now, what is the word nasi? In our language, nasi means president, but nasi means lifted up above. It means prince or lifted above. Nasi is from the word. What? Yes, so nasi means above, lifted above everyone else. He goes, you are a superior person. Of course, we would give you anything that you want. Now, what exactly does nasi mean? Nasi Elokim. Ibn Ezra writes over here, Derech Gdula Ba'avor Ki Ata Navi. No, that it's because of his spiritual capabilities is why he's considered to be a king. The Nitziv points out in 11, Nasi Elokim, Ki Yeshnei Minei Gdula Ba'Hanaga, Aleph Manhig HaMedina B'Chachma V'Nikunasi. There's different types of leadership. One is a political type, where the person hopefully is possessing of wisdom, and you would call that person a Nasi. Sheni Minhag Eshe Manhig So you have spiritual leaders and you would have military leaders. So which one is Avraham? So the Ibn Ezra writes, sorry, the Emek Davar, the Tziv writes the next line, third line, and Avraham was both. Avraham is a spiritual leader, he's a teacher, but he's also somebody who's absolutely involved in political things which take place, in wars and battles and so on. Avraham is not the kind of guy who sits on the side and says, I'll just learn and that will solve all the world's problems. Avram is somebody who becomes actively involved in affecting political and military situations. In the Battle of Stone, if you look at Source 12, who said we should go to Stone? V'yetzei melech Stone l'krato acharei shuvo me'akot et kadr la'oma v'et melachim asher ito el emek shaveh hu emek hamelech. So, this is at the end of the battles. It says that they all come, all the kings come, El Emek Shaveh. So presumably Emek Shaveh is the name of a place. And Emek is a valley. What does Shaveh mean? I guess the name of the valley. Hu Emek HaMelech. So whatever this Emek Shaveh is, it's Emek, it's the king's valley. So what is this king's valley? Look at Rashi. Should we do Rashi? No. Look at Source 14. V'yetzim el chstom l'krato, Rabbi Abba bar Kahana Amar, hitchil l'kashkesh lo biznavo, Omer le'ma'ata, you read it l'kivshana esh. Do I want to do that one? No, it's a continuation of 14. El Emek Shava, Rabbi Brachya v'Rabbi Chanina, b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Shesham hishvu kol ovdei kochavim, v'kitzitzu arazim, they cut down trees, v'asu bima gdola, they made a big, how do you say bima? Platform. V'hushiva oto b'tocho l'mala, and they put him on top of this platform, v'hayu makalsin l'fanav v'omru lo shamanu adoni, and so on, omru lo malach et aleinu. You should become the king, which means when he defeats in the battle, the four kings and the five kings, at the very end, when Avram is victorious, when you have all these kings, and Avram apparently, what they're telling us over here, is when you have four kings and five kings, Avram is the tenth king. And Avram is the tenth king who's about to be accepted by all the other kings, and they say, you be our melech. Amalem al yichsa olam malko ve'eloko. He goes, is the world lacking a king and a god? Which means, we don't need kings. But by the way, this is fascinating. Because if we are to take this midrash in a literal sense, and the reason to take this literally or semi-literally is because if a major battle takes place and Avram is the one is victorious within this major battle, this is the scene that would normally take place after a major military battle. The person who has the most strength is the person who then retains the most power. This is not like some kind of total rabbinic imagination coming in, midrashic imagination coming in. It's saying, this is really what should have happened. Why did this not happen? So according to this, is that Avram is saying, we don't need a melech, because we have a melech. We don't need a king, we have a king of kings. What do you need a king for? We have a god, you don't need a king. Now the reason why this is so interesting is that Judaism has always had a very interesting relationship with attitudes towards monarchies. Which means, it seems to be, when you go through the various chapters that deal with it, it seems to be a necessary evil, or a concession to the people, or some kind of a pragmatic political need. But Avraham is saying, well, let's look at the negativity of kingship, because kings are people that, they're going to have too many wives, they'll take your daughters. I mean, remember the whole thing that it says about kings? It's as if Avraham understands all that, which is, and by the way, he perhaps has suffered by this a bit. But what I do want you to think about then, is that this connotation of Avraham as king may not be as bizarre as we have thought initially, and we may actually gain a lot by now in our imaginations seeing Avraham as king as he's going from place to place. Which means Avraham is a traveling king. Let's think of it that way for a moment. Avraham is a traveling king. He is a man of influence. He's a man of substance. He's a king who's even better than the other kings. Why? Because he doesn't need to be king. Again, he doesn't need this at all, but nonetheless, perhaps that's the way that Avram should be seen. First of all, you have a great deal of irony, if you understand it this way. And the irony is identified in Source 24 by the Targum Yonatan's description of Hagar. Who was Hagar? So look at the end of Source 24. V'lo nitzterech levaneha, right, we don't need Hagar, we don't need a daughter. Shel Hagar bat paro ben Nimrod. Which means here it's lining them all up together. It's saying, who is Paro? Paro is the son of Nimrod. Who's Nimrod? He was the first one who was ever king. Right? You accept that Nimrod is the first one who's... Nimrod was the first person who declared himself king. He's the first person to build a city. He's the first person to build a civilization. He's the first person to raise himself above everyone else. He is the first king. Who is Nimrod's most famous adversary, who he tries to get rid of and doesn't succeed? Obviously, Avraham. So now, instead of just looking at the four kings and the five kings, and that battle where Avram's victorious, which that then establishes as king, what happens when Avram fights Nimrod and doesn't lose to Nimrod? What is Avram's status going to be afterwards? Well, it's going to be equal to whatever the status of Nimrod is, which means if Nimrod is considered to be the king, so now Avram is going to be considered to be a king in terms of his power, in terms of his influence, perhaps. And now, again, Avram's kingship is not of one place. Kol ha-nefesh asu b'charan. They all start to follow, and he has this entourage. But Avram would be seen by these people as being king. But this Targum gives us wonderful poetic justice, because it's saying is that who are the people that end up abusing Avram? One is Paro, and two is Nimrod. And what does he end up walking away with? He ends up walking away. What? With Paro's daughter. With Paro's daughter. And by the way, there's another Targum Yonatan, I just remembered, I don't know, I forget, I guess I'm getting old, that says that Eliezer was Nimrod's son. So again, just in terms of, you know, poetic justice, you have Nimrod fighting Avram, and then now the succession of Avram. By the way, that's fascinating, because when I look at the Avram succession issues, who's the first one who we see as being the possible successor of Avram? You see that as being Eliezer, and Eliezer is Nimrod's son. So Nimrod's son, according to that approach, would have abandoned Nimrod and goes to Avram, because his father's no longer king. Avram is the real king. Hagar, who's Paro's daughter, Paro has this interaction with Avram, but instead of staying in Egypt, I know it's better for me to be with Avram than to be with Sarah, because this is the real kingship that I want to follow. But so again, this view of looking at Avram as king, I think, gives us a little bit. But it may give us something else as well. And I'm not sure if you have to be careful, because you know, we say in the bracha after the Shema, we say Emet v'yatziv, and then there's a whole bunch of other words, and then it says Tov v'yafeh. So sometimes you say something and it's only Tov v'yafeh, but you don't know if it's Emet v'yatziv. So I guess Tov v'yafeh is very, very nice and beautiful, but Emet v'yatziv is true. So I'm not sure if this is Emet v'yatziv, but I hope it's at least Tov v'yafeh. Once we're getting into the world of kings, so we need also to think about a king's mindset. And especially, let's think about when Avram has the first interaction with the king, which is recorded in the Chumash, and that's Paro. Right? That's the first interaction we see in the text itself. And let's listen to the words that Avram says. Because he says something which I think most people would find somewhat disturbing. The Ramban found it incredibly disturbing, to the extent the Ramban said that Avram Avinu did a great sin. What is that? What is it that he did? Avram's afraid that they may kill him. So what does he do? He says, we'll say that you're my sister. Right? Avram says...
No. Who says that?
The Ramban. Yeah. Ramban.
He says,
yeah, he says, Avram chata chata gedola. Avram sinned an incredible sin. And look in the Or HaChaim, because see how he defends Avram against the Ramban's complaint. It's very interesting. What? No. Leave the Ramban. That doesn't concern me. We're not there yet. Avram, one second, give me a second, because you have to understand this. So Avram's afraid they're going to kill him. So Avram says, now say that she's my sister, right? In ancient... In ancient Egypt... If you go, you can look on Google. Google knows everything. In ancient Egypt, if you look who the pharaohs married, they all married their sisters. So when Avram says, it's my sister, what should Paro have understood if he saw Avram as a king? But she's the wife of a king. So at that point itself, Paro's response should have been, oh, okay. I mean, which means, right, Paro's response should have been, Avram is a king, this is his sister, this is his wife. I mean, that should have been the end of the discussion. So I'm saying, what you gain from this is that if you see Avram as being a king, and Avram is having this interaction with Paro, that becomes the most logical thing to say, it's my sister, which means that it's my wife, and therefore I am a king, and therefore you should not be doing anything which is disrespectful over here. But Paro obviously disrespects everybody. By the way, the issue of Paro is marrying their sisters. As I said, you can check it up in terms of secular ancient history. You can also see it perhaps as the if you look at source.
Misunderstood this all the while?
Excuse me?
Misunderstood this. Traditionally, you were always taught. Abram said, say you're my sister, so I'll be your brother, so I won't be a threat.
So I won't be killed. So I won't be killed. I'm saying.
Exactly.
I'm saying.
You never learned that it was because you.
Because I never said it before.
I
never said it before. So how can anybody. No, what I'm saying is that the only reason we can get to this point, if we have this appreciation that perhaps Avram is a king, and as I said, maybe that's the whole point of the Haftorah, is to come back and tell us that there is a comparison between David and between Avram, and as David is a king who has certain issues in terms of succession, Avram should be seen as a king in terms of all kinds of relationships that have been going on, and our problem of not seeing that is because we chose not to see Avram that way. We prefer to see Avram as Avram Avinu, and not to see Avram as Avram HaMelech, even though, once we start to think about it, we realize that there are a number of different expressions where we see that both based upon words and based upon context, Avram would have been viewed as a king within the situation of the. Nonetheless, Avraham rejects it, but the fact that he rejects it, does that take away from his particular status? Later on in the Torah, when it will say, look at source 20. V'deber Hashem Moshe le'mor, deber b'nei Yisrael amarta lehem, ani Hashem Elokeichem, kama aseh eretz Mitzrayim eshe yishavtem ba, lo ta'asu, k'ma'ase eretz kanana, asher ani mevi etchem shama lo ta'asu, u'b'chukoteim lo te'lechu. That verse then continues into verse 4, where it starts a whole list of all the forbidden relationships. Ish ishek she'er v'saro lo t'ver l'gulot, ervat Hashem, ervat avicha ve'ervat imecha, all the forbidden relationships. But what's the introduction to the forbidden relationships? Don't do what they do in Egypt. What is it that they did in Egypt that it's telling that you shouldn't do? Or what is the v'chukoteim lo te'lechu? So, for example, if you look at 22, where it's underlined, v'chukoteihim, shechakeku mid'at gedoleihim, shera'uilin hokach liyot ach nosei achoto uchadome. Which means, what were the practices? But I'm saying, specifically, kama'asei eretz Mitzrayim, the behavior of Egypt would have been institutionalized, whereby the king were to marry his sister. But I'm saying, so now if you think about it, when Avram meets with Paro, and he says, this is my sister. If Paro is going to be respectful of Avram, and why should he be respectful of Avram when he sees the entire entourage over there? And if Avram says, it's my sister, so now what is Avram saying to Paro? Again, within Paro's mindset, what's he saying? He's saying, this is my wife, and you should be treating me as a king and treating me as an equal. What does Paro do instead? Paro completely ignores it and then decides for himself, how he's going to behave. But ultimately, again, the irony, ultimately, Paro then will send him off with great gifts and send him off with great honor, which means that in retrospect, and even with his daughter, which means ultimately Paro accepts Avraham as king, which means Avraham ends up being this reluctant king who doesn't accept kingship. And why doesn't he accept kingship? Because Avram's entire mission is to tell the world that there's only one king, and that's the king who's in heaven, which means he refuses to accept this, but that doesn't mean that within the context of where he lived, the people would have seen him as being a king. Again, when you see four kings against five kings, don't imagine that every single one of these people are kings of tens of millions of people. Four kings versus five kings means that these are basically Bedouin leaders of not necessarily all that large groups, and there therefore may not be any reason to suspect that the group that Avraham leads is less important than the others. Now again, if you go, let's say, even into the whole story of Lot, where Lot's shepherds, they wanted to, and why? Because Avram's king. I mean, that's the whole point. Avram's going to control all this land, and Avram's shepherds say, not yet, which means Avraham keeps pushing off any kinds of leadership role in the sense of kingship which has these rights. And correct, David HaMelech utilizes this kind of behavior. He ends up abusing the power of leadership, And now, when we get to this end of the life, Avraham, who refuses it and is victimized by it, Avraham is blessed with everything, and David HaMelech, who had abused this time, he's there, you know, lying, unable to keep himself warm, and he's cold, and again, that becomes the whole start of the Haftorah. But as I said, that contrast becomes a very interesting contrast, but even more so when you realize it's not David who's king and Avram who's not king, it's Avram who could have been king, but chooses not to conduct himself as king. But maybe, as I said, I'm just looking at it, I said, I think it's Tov V'Yafeh, I don't know if it's Emet V'Yatziv, but maybe the one time that Avraham is willing even to make believe that he's king is actually to save his life and to save Sarah's life. Because if Parah would understand the code that he's saying to him, this is my sister and I am king, then at that point Parah should have left the two of them alone and give them a great deal of honor, and that should have been the end of it. The problem, of course, is that Parah refuses to accept him. And it, as I said, if what I'm saying is correct, then he's not offering up Sarah to save his own life. Quite the opposite. He's trying to show how he shouldn't be touching Sarah whatsoever because of the position that he's in.
Well, if sister equals wife,
yeah.
Why didn't he just
the
say,
same
she's my wife?
Because if it's his wife, because if it's wife, if it's, I mean, you see this in the dialogue, then he's not a king. The issue is to be king. If you look, yeah, I'm saying if you also look in the dialogue with Avimelech, Avimelech says to him, excuse me?
The Egyptians believe that a sister is to be
wife. No, but it's true. They said that the second source, they come out 30 years ago, that in where he's coming from, Mesopotamia, they married their sister.
Right, right. No, this is true of the Near East, which means you want to keep it in the family, and it's one of control and genealogy and whatever.
It's interesting that one time he tries to play the game of the king is when we all get in trouble because there's all about Ishmael.
Correct.
Basically.
Correct.
It's very nice that Parah gives him his daughter, right. And then we get stuck with Ishmael for another, you know, 3,000 years.
Correct, correct.
That was sad.
So, anyway, as I said, so now in retrospect, the title for today's class should be Avraham HaMelech, but I guess maybe you could put a question mark at the end. Shabbat Shalom.